Find this podcast and others like it at the number one new media network, Podshow.com. Better, faster, stronger. And now with new minty fresh scent.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
City Queercast show number 86. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick.
Hello, Peter.
Hello, and it's warm out.
It's so pretty. What? It's going to be flurries by the end of the week,
yeah,
but I'll take it while I got it.
Amen.
I don't care. I'm picky, but I'm not that picky when it comes to a sunshiny day.
No, it was beautiful, and it was so humid. There was a nice soft breeze this morning walking to work, and everybody had a little bit of spring in their step on the train. It was quite lovely.
Hey, I wore a skirt today with no hose and some Uggs, and that felt just right. My toes were toasty, and my legs were nice and cool. So
did you wear panties?
Well.
Oh, she's not telling. Where's my shoe mirrors?
I'm not telling. I don't have them on now. I took my skirt off for you.
There's a song in Poseidon, the musical adventure of Helena Handbag, and it's called No Panties.
Yeah.
It's just hysterical.
Going commando.
Yeah, hopefully we'll be able to hear that. We're having a Helena Handbag event in April, so more details to come on.
My friend Cecilia Pickle Wingate, Cecilia Shirey Pickle Wingate, who I used to call Pickle. Cecilia used to say, girl, I gotta let that thing breathe. She was
all Pickle on her birth certificate?
No, that was one of her married names.
She's like her married names.
You know, she's like dynasty. She's like the Alexis of the South.
Wow.
Like it's seriously Cecilia Shirey Pickle Wingate. Like
she married someone named Pickle.
Mm-hmm.
That poor man.
Shirey is her first name, but she's Pickle to me. But anyhow, she used to always say, you know. Gotta let it breathe.
Right. So it was kind of a musical weekend for me.
Yeah, and a musical weekend for you. But tell me all about Scissor Sisters, because you and I have been sitting here around one another, and we haven't been able to talk about it.
It's the elephant in the room. We couldn't talk about it until the microphone went on. So it was at the Riviera, which is normally not a venue I go when I want to super have a good time. The Riv is fun, but you're usually jostling around with people on the first floor, and there's no chairs. Right, there's no chairs.
And it's pretty sticky. Your feet are sticking to the floor. It's a pretty grungy place for the slick disco Scissor Sisters.
Absolutely. You can't smoke in there anymore, which is a blessing, though, because you don't come out stinking. But my friend Jane and my friend Ken hooked me up with the Shiznit tickets. We were the front row of the balcony. And the front row of the balcony at the Riviera is like scalloped. So we had tons of leg room. We're sitting right there. We're almost center. We can see everything. It was an incredible show. They were so high energy. They were so gracious. They came out, you know, started the show. And between the first two songs, they apologized for not being able to come. They said, you know, we're so sorry. We couldn't make it. We had some problems.
Because this was they were supposed to come and then they had to cancel.
It was supposed to be here a long time ago and they had to cancel because the drummer threw his back out in a serious way.
Yeah.
So he finally got all healed and they were able to come back. They were just so high energy, so wonderful. Jake Shears was so well dressed except for one minor faux pas. In his first suit, he did not have a belt on. I was like, Jake Shears, where is your belt? Where is your belt?
Yeah.
But you know what he made up for? Because he showed his full on ass to the audience.
Did he really pass out chaps?
No, he was wearing these little stripy shorts near the end, and he whipped his butt out. He let the pants down and whipped his ass out. He has the most smoothest little pert little butt you ever seen in your life. But I was like, I am staring at Jake Shear's ass. That made me want to be in the front row, I have to tell you.
Not of the balcony, but of the front row.
Of the front row, really, right next to the stage.
Floor is.
Animatronic was looking stunning. She was wearing this awesome, like, silver, you know those, like, silver 80s gowns?
Yeah.
But it was really well done. It had these good, silvery, chunky, big baubles. It looked like a dress you would wear. And it was actually...
Did it really?
Because it was, like, steel silvery. So it was really, it was very refined. She looked so great. Her hair was flawless the whole time. She had this gigantic, like, Uzi thing with a gas cartridge in it and was shooting these wigs out into the audience the entire time.
Shooting wigs?
Shooting wigs. There were, the cannon was loaded with wigs. And she was shooting them up in the balcony. And there were these big, long, blonde, curly wigs. It was phenomenal.
How
I was blown
crazy
away.
Is that?
It was so good. Baby Daddy was looking cute as ever. And the rest of the gang. I mean, it was so much fun. It felt like a very short show because they're so upbeat and so high energy.
Yeah.
But, you know, they saved the new hit from the new album was the second to last, I Don't Feel Like Dancing.
Which is, I work out to that song every other day.
And then they left the stage and then they came back and they closed with Take Your Mama Out All Night, which the whole theater was on fire. It was so positive and so fun and so nice, and they were interacting with the audience, and I just...
So what is the deal with them? Like, why are they such a European phenom and not yet here? Like, why are they only playing the riff? Like, they're
to be honest,
freaking awesome.
To be honest, I think it's because Jake is really loud and out.
Yeah.
That's really what I think is going on. And it's so asinine because they don't get enough radio play. They don't get enough everything there. But, you know, Europe, it's cool. Europe made George Michael. George Michael doesn't do great here anymore like he used to do in Europe.
Yeah,
you know what
it's
I mean?
Just, it's so unusual. I would think they would be such a band of just, you know, there's nobody like them, and they're so fun.
No, there
and
isn't.
So
and he's
infectious.
So...
And I would just think that, you know, is there retro quality holding them back? I don't know what it is, but
it's
that
they're also not hip-hop music.
Yeah.
They don't do hip-hop shit. I mean, why is Fergie where Fergie is today?
Yeah.
Because she does the hippity hop. Everybody's doing, Justin is Justin because he does the hippity hop. Britney is Britney because she does the hippity hop. Everybody's doing the hippity hop. With the exception of the Dixie Chicks, possibly, but
yeah.
They hate the president like everybody else in America too. So yeah. But hip hop is so infused in what's going on, and they revolt. They're the opposite of that sound.
Yeah.
So I really think I have to put it back on that he's so out and proud, and I love him for it. And you know what? Everywhere they go in America, they're selling out venues.
Yeah.
They really and truly are selling out.
Yeah, well, I just, you know, I hope for them more and more growth. I mean, it would be...
Yeah, I think it will be. And I read an interesting article with them. I can't remember what online magazine it was, but they said that... it might even have been CNN that they did an interview, and they said that, you know what, we're not upset with our success.
Yeah.
We're doing it the way that we want to do it. They're doing it exactly the way that they want to do it. They don't have big money pushing them around and slamming them into venues and putting them on crazy, crazy errands. And they learned their lesson. They basically broke their bodies down during this first tour, and they have traveling chiropractors and acupuncturists and bodywork people traveling with them because they tried to be overambitious about it. But I think... just to see them on stage, they were so genuine and so happy. I mean, they were all like bouncing around like little kids in a candy store. So,
so awesome.
Well, just know, such good energy.
It's really interesting because today, announced on the Today Show, Cyndi Lauper came on and announced her True Colors tour.
Absolutely.
Which will be a tour that will be a major city tour to give money to the Human Rights Campaign. Also, the Matthew Shepard Foundation is involved. And so is PFLAG, the Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. And, you know, it was pretty amazing to see on the Today Show this morning, like, her appear, her sing True Colors, yes. But for her, before, you know, she sang her song, and it was so funny because you see Meredith Ferreira going, when is she going to breathe so I can interrupt her?
Right.
But she really just sat there and said, this is why we're doing it, and this is why we need to be doing concerts so that everyone's treated fairly. And, you know, America's about the home of the free. It's not about everybody but you, gay and lesbian people. And... I just thought that was really huge, and the fact that the tour is going to have guests and visiting artists from everybody like the Indigo Girls to Rufus Wainwright to Erasure to
Debbie Harry
to Margaret Cho emceeing every one of them.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be fantastic if the Scissor Sisters popped into a city
or
two.
Sure.
Like, you know, because this seems like this would be truly their their venue, but I do encourage people to go to HRC, and if you're a member, you can go ahead and get your tickets, I think, right now.
What's it called? It's called truecolorstour.com is where you can go. The tip is that if you want to buy, I'm probably not supposed to be saying this, but I'm going to tell you anyway, if you want to buy your tickets early, go online. The HRC presale is still on for just about every single venue. You use the code HRC, capital HRC, and you can get your tickets. I got mine for Radio City Music Hall already.
There you go.
I'm going to New York. We're going to Broadway Bears, which is the night before, which she performed at, and last year I got to see her there. So I'm certain they're all going to be there in New York. That's back-to-back. That's the 17th and the 18th in June.
Well, you know, my girlfriend just did was one of the creators of Laramie Project, and she just did a big anniversary reading of the Laramie Project in New York here not too long ago on World AIDS Day, which was Matthew Shepard's 30th birthday. And, Cindy was a part of that as well. So we may have to... say, Cindy, we want to be down front for that.
Yeah, on, girl. Hey!
But I'm glad to see Cindy Lauper align herself, like with the reading of the Laramie Project and with this tour. It's really amazing, and she's just a great straight ally. Her sister is gay, and, and she showed up at the gay games. And I truly feel like, there are these anthems to our community that have been of our time.
Absolutely.
And definitely Freedom by George Michael is one of them. And True Colors is a different one. True Colors is kind of like the heart song of our community. It's kind of like the heart. It is the heart song of, I think,
I always get a little weepy.
It's hard not
to. It always makes me think about the people who are gone. That's what that's what True Colors always makes me think about. Not the people who are here, but the people who are gone. That's always a little sadness. But you had some music, too.
I did. And speaking of just a little heart songs, I went to go see, and you heard us interview her here, Maude Maggart, who is Fiona Apple's sister. She was a part of the Traffic Jam series, and though I did not get to see the Diddy Bops, my girlfriend went, so they were great. But I went the next night to see Maude perform, and she's 32. She looks a lot like Fiona, very live, a little more hippie and soft around the edges, just kind of energy wise, where Fiona is kind of edgy around the edges. But she has this voice that is just so otherworldly, and I had seen her perform many years ago, like 5 or 6 years ago with her debut in New York. And I have to tell you, she has grown so immensely. That was the quietest and most attentive and just captivated audience I have been in years. I mean, I can't even remember. It was just wrapped with something happening in that space. And it was so powerful. And
And she's got that good medium. I mean, she's cabaret. She's a storyteller.
She's a historian. She's not one to sit there and really tell her story, although she did tell a great story about her grandmother, who used to be kind of like a Ziegfeld Follies girl, who at like 91 still wears
garters. Is that
like
where it all comes from?
Yeah, still wears garters under her dress. Probably, she said, wore pasties as opposed to being all nude. But
don't want the nipple to show. Keep the pasty underneath.
But really what she does is, she knows exactly who wrote every song, the year it was written in, what was going on. I mean, she really is an educator, which is really true to like Andrea Marcovici and Michael Feinstein and how they've kept the songbook alive. But what she's also done is she's infused her show with some contemporary songs. She did some, her show was Good Girl, Bad Girl, so she did some stuff about contemporary, like kind of the framework of the show is the Little Red Riding Hood myth. And she did an older Little Red Riding Hood song, and then she ended with the one from Into the Woods, and I Know Things Now. But in the middle of that, she only did one song by a woman artist, and I have to say it was absolutely the power punch of the show. She did a Joan Baez song that I would have never known was Joan Baez. So she definitely pulls from, different places, but just playful, absolutely transcendent in her interpretation of a song. And I have to say that my expectation was just kind of on average to go. I thought, she's getting all this buzz, but she's who she is, and probably got a leg up and all that. She is extraordinary, and there's something extraordinary about watching her sing. And just really amazing. It's more of a great live voice than I even think it would be a great recorded voice, but it has such a haunting and at the same time extremely present quality about it. She's just lovely. So if you get a chance to see Maude Maggart, or I highly recommend getting her music. It's just...
Did she have a band? Was she just a piano?
She did. She had a fantastic piano player, and she had a guy who played cello or guitar. And she was kind of dressed in a black evening gown with a diamond brooch kind of at the V-neck low-cut center of her bosom, but at the same time, she had these like bosom. she had these totally like hippie kind of clunky shoes on, but the dress was all the way to the floor. So there's a very classic appearance about her, and yet at the same time, she's doing a Joan Baez song about a one night stand, but doing it like a 1930s song. Wow. And, you know, going, probably Irving Berlin would have never written this. Cole Porter might have, you know, and making jokes like that. Yeah. And, you know, so just really, or Noel Coward might have, like, she's a member of the Noel Coward Society. She laughed about that. She was like, I'm probably one of the only 32-year-olds who's a member of the Noel Coward Society. But, you know, just really amazing. So if you get a chance to see her here in New York, anywhere, I cannot recommend it. And I just want to say thanks to Steppenwolf for just like a great series of concerts and
absolutely.
And just, you know, performance over those weeks of the traffic jam. Really amazing.
Good stuff going on there.
So somebody who knows everything about the pulse and the beat and has been to probably every concert, and every party, and every...
done every drug, every sexual position, and seen everybody do everything.
And we're talking about none other than the Village Voice's Michael Musto, who has La Dolce Musto, his new book, which is out. He's going to be at Sidetrack here in about a week and a half.
Yep.
And we sit down and talk with him, I know you were just devouring his book.
I read it cover to cover. I had to stop reading it on the train because I kept like snotting a little bit when people were clutching their purses around me. I was laughing.
It's his old articles, so it kind of takes you through history. You know, if you're
really
writing an article in 86, you're like, oh my God, remember when Madonna and Sandra Bernhardt were
absolutely
at that benefit with those jeans on and those weird tops?
And there were so many, it's so interesting that he was a weekly columnist for the Village Voice. And if you've never read La Dolce Musto, he has this writing style where you get so wrapped up in the article that by the time you get to the end of it, and they're short, they're maybe 500-600 words tops.
Right.
By the time you get to the end of it, it's just so, you're laughing, you're pleased, you've learned something, you can't believe you just read that, and then you can't wait for the next one to come out.
Yeah, because he's got the skinny.
He really does. He's really got the inside track. He's been there, done that, he knows everybody. But it's just so interesting how reading his book, and you hit on it exactly, that there were so many like trigger events that he wrote about, so many different things. 9/11, very serious things, yet he can really cast them in this very interesting light to sort of pull you in and make you read it. It's just a wonderful, wonderful compendium of stories, basically. And he has
truly history.
And he has the most unique way of, I have to tell you, I've stolen one of his expressions, booger sugar, which is a euphemism for cocaine, because I just absolutely love that. And I think it's one of the most brilliant ones he's ever written.
Yeah, we were watching some Queen Deuce getting up and doing some booger
sugar at Sandra Bernhardt.
I was like,
Lord have mercy.
I was like, lady, sit down.
Right.
Girl.
Just, girl, can you not hold
some
that bump
old
away?
Queen.
My people, I cry for my people.
I cry for my people too.
But he's with us today. He just has
fabulous.
So many fun stories. We've got the news for you. And you know, Michael Musto. I mean, what the hell else do you need other than Michael Musto? Really?
That's it.
That's it. We could just put him,
Casey,
you know, record and had him just talk a monologue for about a half an hour.
That'd be good.
Wouldn't have been enough, but he's a great guy. So we got more for you guys after this.
Find out what happened before Dorothy dropped in at Wicked, Chicago's newest smash hit musical, and the untold story of the Witches of Oz.
Popular, I know about popular.
Popular, USA Today calls Wicked a triumph. And Time magazine writes, if every musical had the brain, the heart, and the courage of Wicked, Broadway really would be a magical place. Now, this Grammy Award-winning blockbuster has cast its spell over Chicago. Wicked, at the Ford Center for the Performing Arts Oriental Theater.
And nobody in all of Oz, no wizard that there is or was, is ever gonna bring me.
Call 312-902-1400 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com today. Because the longer you wait, the longer you'll wait to see Wicked. Sponsored by Chase.
Need a vacation from your holiday? Crave some real relaxation and cuddle time without Cousin Susie watching your every move? Not to worry. GayHotelDiscounts.com is here to help. If you're a queen in need of a king, bed that is, you can find the luxury you desire at a price you can afford. Powered by the strongest search engine on the web, GayHotelDiscounts.com are your gay travel experts.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Nudist Colony Activity Coordinator.
Mr. Nudist Colony Activity Coordinator.
Wearing nothing but a whistle and a clipboard, you're living the real American dream. Getting paid to think up fun things to do, naked.
Running free.
Sure, there's danger. Vinyl chairs, sunburns, chafage, and lawn darts, completely out of the question.
Watch out!
Your keen instincts tell you to stick to activities that involve lots of bouncing and jiggling. And if that doesn't work, who cares? You're all naked.
It's your birthday.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, nudie boy. Because we all know, when the going gets tough, the tough get naked.
The nudist college activity coordinator.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get
some culture in your life.
Join the club.
And for the week of March 12th, 2007, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Remy Bumbo Theater Company concludes its 10th year of Think Theater with Mrs. Warren's Profession by George Bernard Shaw. Censored for 8 years for airing Polite Society's Dirty Laundry, this controversial comedy, full of wit and colorful characters, remains as relevant today as when it was written. Mrs. Warren's Profession, playing now through April 22nd at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse Theater. For tickets, call 773-871-3000 or visit remybumbo.org.
The Chicago Tribune says it's intriguing, tantalizing, lush, and gorgeous. Hubbard Street Dance Chicago presents two separate programs featuring exhilarating new works by leading American and international choreographers, April 11th through the 22nd at the Harris Theater. Call 866-535-HSDC or visit hubbardstreetdance.com.
Germany, 1722. Seven musicians apply for the prestigious post of organist at the Thomaskirche. Insecurities, shortfalls of talent, and widely clashing ideologies collide in a wild and witty exploration of music, ambition, and art. Don't miss Bach at Leipzig at Writers Theater. This vibrant play draws its inspiration from history while taking much delight in its fictional flights of fancy. For more on Bach at Leipzig, go to writerstheater.org or call 847-242-6000.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Windy City Queercast is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago and Wicked, the most popular musical in Chicago history. For tickets, visit wickedthemusical.com/Chicago.
And this is your Windy City Queercast news. Several newspapers have dropped right-wing pundit Ann Coulter's syndicated column after she referred to presidential candidate John Edwards as a faggot. Tennessee's The Mountain Press, the Oakland Press in Michigan, and Pennsylvania's Lancaster New Era have stopped running Ann Coulter's column, and three major companies, Verizon, NetBank, and Sallie Mae, requested that their ads be pulled from her website. Coulter was heavily criticized for using the gay slur about Edwards at the American Conservative Union's Political Action Conference.
Conservative TV guest and former gay porn star Marine Corporal Matt Sanchez answered questions on the internet about his past and about colleague Ann Coulter. About his pornographic past, Sanchez said, quote, "I've moved forward a lot, and this past stuff is not something I want to drag into my future." He also insisted that he is not gay. He said, quote, "I, personally, wouldn't have used the word faggot in public like that. That said, Anne made a joke, and that's just what she does. I wouldn't want her right to speak breached in any way."
In Utah, legislators rejected a measure that would repeal sodomy for same-sex couples. The state statute bans oral and anal sex. The bill never received a public hearing. However, the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that states can't tell consenting adults what to do in their own homes.
The United States has stopped funding clinics in Puerto Rico that treat AIDS patients. The Commonwealth's administration is blaming the FBI, saying that the organization has interfered and taken documents the clinics needed to get reimbursed. The AIDS rate in Puerto Rico is twice the rate in the United States.
Same-sex couple Elizabeth Birch and Hillary Rosen have ended their 15-year relationship. Birch, an attorney, was former director of the Human Rights Campaign. Rosen was chief executive of the Recording Industry Association of America from 1998 to 2003. Quite a power couple. The couple will both raise their 8-year-old twins.
Premier Magazine, a celebrity publication for 2 decades, will switch to an all-digital format. The current edition, on stands until April 16th, will be the last printed one. Competition from periodicals such as Entertainment Weekly contributed to Premier's transition.
Radio personality Howard Stern recently talked on his show about his fiancé's crush on the L-word, Shane. quote, Beth has some sort of weird thing for this chick on the L word, Shane, he said. You know, sometimes at night we watch separate TV shows in separate rooms, and every time I go in, she's watching that Shane. He called his fiancée during his broadcast, and she says, I don't fantasize about her, but I have to say that when I watch that show, I fixate on her scenes, especially her sex scenes. I love watching them.
Only Howard Stern. In California, retired Judge James Randall Ross, who was responsible for Disneyland lifting its ban against gays, passed away at age 80. Ross was also the great-grandson of the famed outlaw Jesse James.
And U2 lead singer Bono will now work in another capacity, that of editor. Bono will be guest editor of the July issue of Vanity Fair magazine. The singer, who has made numerous appearances in Africa regarding poverty and AIDS, will include items about the continent in this issue.
And that's your Windy City Queercast news.
This is Katie Curtis, and you're listening to Windy City Queercast.
Michael Musto isn't just your regular weekly columnist, nor is he your everyday gossip queen, but somewhere in the realm of comedy, satire, and honest-to-goodness snarkiness, he manages to find one of the most entertaining places in writing today. As a writer for The Village Voice, where his weekly column La Dolce Musto is published, he has what is arguably one of the best jobs in the world, keeping us all up to speed on celebrity gossip and so much more. He's put together a collection of his columns in a new book called La Dolce Musto, Writings by the World's Most Outrageous Columnist. Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Michael. Wow. Now, I think that you have just sat amongst the icons of our time.
Oh, my God. I have to hang out with you people more often.
And how fabulous is that? You know, I want to know, like, were you always somebody who loved to just sit in the middle of it and be an observer on life and talk to people? Were you always a people person?
Absolutely. I'm actually painfully shy, and in a way, my job is a punishment to myself because my worst nightmare is being in a room full of strangers, and that's where I find myself every night. But I am a wonderful listener, and I do have a kind of Andy Warholian passivity that allows people to kind of come up to me and unburden themselves on me. So that does make me popular. And I, by giving out mentions in my column, which now has become a book, it's almost like I'm giving out little drug, you know, I'm like a drug dealer of press mentions on the scene. People come to me to get noticed, and they don't even care if it's a negative mention, which is good because it usually is.
All press is good press. All press is good press.
Well, absolutely. Exactly. I mean, the subtitle is Writing by the World's Most Outrageous Columnist. What makes you so outrageous?
I'm totally fearless. And when I started the column literally 22 years ago, the Village Voice editors gave me the ball and said, just run with it. They wouldn't give me any direction whatsoever. They said, write whatever you want. Just make it within the boundaries of, you know, legality and truthfulness and fairness. And I've done that. I've outed celebrities who've not been happy about it. I've printed my outrageous opinions. This was before the world of the internet and blogs and everyone kind of posting their own outrageous opinion. I was the original blogger. I was the first gay. You know, if Janet Dickinson was the world's first supermodel, I was the first gay. And
long before Perez Hilton, there was Michael Musto.
Oh, way before that. And I was definitely the first gossip columnist.
Yeah. Well, you were. And I think, you know, you were out and proud years ahead of so many people. And you really called a lot of people out. And then lo and behold, you know, Rosie steps out of the closet and she's a Mo. And Ellen steps out and she's a Mo, too. And all this good stuff. Were you vindicated? Were you happy? Were you sad? Were you indifferent? What were you thinking about that?
Oh, I was very happy. First of all, my gaydar has never been wrong, which is amazing. I mean, now it seems so obvious. Oh, of course, Rosie was, you know, a lesbian, Ellen's lesbian. You have to remember there was a time when there were a lot of people who weren't that sure of that. And Rosie was presenting herself when she had her own talk show as a kind of ambiguous single mom who had a crush on Tom Cruise. And I was outraged by that. And I was also outraged by the way the media went along with it. That was my main concern. I can understand why some celebrities might want to kind of keep one foot in the closet at times, though that doesn't please me. But there's no reason why the media has to enforce that and go along with the idea that saying that you're gay is the worst thing imaginable. So when they both came out, I really was jumping up and down with joy, and I have nothing but praise, especially for Rosie. I think she's the biggest out dyke now since Eleanor Roosevelt or something.
So,
Ellen, in a way, Ellen has gone back to early Rosie, you know, ambiguity. Like, she's out in the media. She's always talking about her girlfriend, Portia, and she's definitely an out lesbian, but on her show, it's weird. She's almost early Rosie, kind of like a neuter.
Yeah, she's very reserved. There's two Ellens. There's one that's, you know, on
but
that
Ellen's
daytime talk
never
show.
Been sexual. I mean, her comedy's not sexual. Mm-hmm. She doesn't really talk a political game. Whereas I think Rosie wanted to be on the political bandwagon, and you kind of can't be on the political bandwagon and then not be authentically who you are. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think that's kind of a little bit of the difference of the two of their.
If only Clay Aiken would come out.
Yeah, and I love when Rosie was supposedly defending her good friend Clay by outing him. She was saying that Kelly Ripa was being homophobic.
Yeah,
By saying that she had no idea where Clay's hand had been. Well, first of all, we know where Clay's hand had been. It had been in John Paulus. That was his Monica Lewinsky.
Oh my.
But have you ever had a reservation about outing someone as, I mean, you're a columnist, you're still a journalist. I mean, you're writing something that lots of people are reading and, you know, are taking your statements as fact, because that's what America does. When they read something, it means it's real.
And now
it's
they
truth.
Know you're right.
I've always been right. No, I've never had a reservation because I don't feel that there's anything wrong about being gay. So I'm not printing anything bad. I'm out myself. So that frees me of any hypocrisy in talking about public figures. And certainly other gossip columnists never think twice about running unbelievably private things, things that the celebrities would never want printed, not to mention terrible reviews of their movies and things that really are damaging to their careers. And then when it came to gay, these same columnists would always say, oh, no, we can't go there. That's a terrible invasion. I always aim to break down that wall and say it's not an invasion. You're projecting something wrong with saying a celebrity is gay. You're agreeing with them that it's a no-go area by making it silent and making it the last taboo.
But 15 years ago, it was the big taboo. Right. And if you're outing somebody, you know, if you're saying or even insinuating that somebody is gay, it actually did affect, you know, people's careers. I mean, it did affect Ellen's now, you know, post Will and Grace, it kind of hasn't. But before she did, it did. But did people ever come to you and say, because you're gay, why are you outing people? Or you know, did
it's because I'm gay that I am outing people. I know that there's nothing wrong in being gay. I'm out about it. I've had a wonderful career being out gay, and I just think other people can too. But you're right. Back in the times when, and also, you know what? I was not making anything up. These people were actually doing things in public, like John Amici, the athlete who recently came out.
He's so cute.
He would go around with his boyfriend. He actually told me that he told a reporter that he was gay, and the reporter didn't pick up on it. So we're not even printing things that people didn't want. We're not even saying things these people didn't want known. They wanted it known. And Ellen and Anne, at the beginning, were making out in lesbian bars in New York.
Yeah.
And I'm the only one who reported that.
Yeah.
They were out with their relationship, but people were terrified to go there. And Anne even gave a big press conference at the time with the movie Volcano, and she had a captive room of press who any of them could have raised their hand and said, aren't you dating Ellen DeGeneres? And not one of them did.
Wow.
And that was the target of my anger. These people want to come out and the media won't even let them.
So who's a new person that wants to come out that you're seeing in clubs?
Oh, God, say Anderson Cooper. Please say Anderson.
No, he doesn't want to come out.
He doesn't want to come out.
It's a whole new landscape now where if you want to come out, believe me, you are outed immediately because you could write whatever you want on the internet. And there are all these blogs that out people immediately. The whole world finds out about it. And then the celebrities do come out. People like Neil Patrick Harris.
Right.
The T.R. guy Knight. That Isaiah Washington yelled at.
T.R. Knight.
T.R. Knight, exactly. People like that. Anderson Cooper used to be a little more out. He used to live more of a gay life. Now he's kind of retreated as he's become more famous. And that's kind of bizarre. And I've written a lot about that.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, you know, you mentioned a couple times, you mentioned about the explosion of blogging and sort of online media. How did that all change for you? Because you were the bee's knees before all that stuff happened, and then it came and it swept up. How has it changed your writing, or has it even made a dent in any of the things that you do?
It's changed the whole gossip landscape. It's really dramatically revitalized everything by making anything reportable. Nobody's squeamish about saying a celebrity's gay because you just throw it up online and there are no repercussions. And it's made everything accessible and immediate. And it's forced the print columnists like myself to kind of scramble even harder to get information, to go darker, go deeper, become more immediate and outrageous. And it's not easy. But I welcome the fresh energy. I think it's a great advance. It's the world that I always dreamed of.
Hmm. That immediacy, or just that absolutely that there aren't so many masks in the celebrity? Does it not a little bit dash the celebrityness of it if we know so much of the reality?
Well, I don't think so. I think a great celebrity is a great celebrity, and people are always scrambling to know as much as they can about them. And I think what the outing is saying is that we have something on everybody. Everybody is hiding something in their closet. Let's all bring it out, because if people realize how many gays there were in showbiz, oh my God, they're in the majority. It's not even a matter of dragging 10% out of the closet. You know, in TV, it's probably like 70%. So what a world that would be if the, all the truth was really known. And someday that will happen.
Yeah. I think we're getting closer and closer each day. You know, I was reading a quote. I was reading a bunch of quotes by you online. Someone nicely collected a handful of them. And one of them was, I'm just a simple kid from Brooklyn who landed in the most enchanted lifestyle imaginable. What does that mean? True. Explain that for us.
Well, I am a very simple kid. I grew up in a kind of middle-class family. I never knew taste, not even bad taste. We just had no taste. And, you know, everything in my house is wrapped in plastic, including my father. And I never had any connections to anything, but entertainment was kind of my escape. Even as a kid, I would go to movies, and that was my catharsis. And then I would come running home and write little, you know, reviews for myself on index cards. And that was my form of communication. But now I've landed in this job, which is so amazing. I get to go out every night. All right, maybe not tonight, but I'd rather talk to you guys anyway.
Yeah. Hey.
I get to go to incredible Broadway openings, movie premieres, parties, after parties, fashion shows. And at the end of the week, I get to write whatever I want about it. And that is literally the most enchanting job on earth. I meet the most exciting people in the world. And then I get to put my take on it in the most frivolous or meaningful or whatever way I want.
Now, has it lost any of its luster, or are you still just as enchanted to meet certain celebrities or to be in certain environments? And if you are, can you tell us what some of them have been recently that have, you know, somebody you've met recently or an event that you've been around?
Well, I have kind of met all my idols, so it's kind of weird. Like everyone I grew up with, I've ultimately met, from Mary Tyler Moore to Carol Burnett, Cher. You know, I've crossed paths with Madonna. I've never met the Olsen twins, so, you know.
Your gay card is
that's dangling in my future like a sugar plum. Like, one day I'm going to meet them, and I'm sure they're going to have a lot to say.
I'm scared that they're your idols, but we'll go on.
That is scary.
So, but I mean, all the parties, all the special events, all the things that you've gone to, is there, I mean, what's left? Is it getting boring? Is it still as exciting as it was?
There's always new, and every day I start afresh. I really approach it like a fan, even though my writing is very cynical.
Yeah.
Deep down, I'm excited when I see a celebrity. And right now, the celebrities are more exciting than ever. The Lindsays, Britneys, you know, Paris Hilton. These people don't do anything, but they make tremendous copy. They exist strictly for tabloids and for gossip columnists like myself.
Oh, the little babies.
They're the best celebrity since, like, Liz and Dick in the 60s. So.
Oh. The little babies. Better. We just went to see Sandra Bernhardt, who I know you love. She was just here at Steppenwolf Theater for a one night only Traffic Jam series and did a whole montage on the little babies, the little Lindsays and Britneys. And this was a new show, but I know that you have been a fan of hers, and she's in your book quite a bit.
Yes, she is.
And I think she's kind of one of those outrageous people that kind of has always had it, you know, to be an observer of life, but with a certain bit of irony, a certain bit of bitter sarcasm, and also fandom.
Absolutely. And she's like me that, you know, we make fun of celebrity, but when it's dangled in front of us, we grab it because we want it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
and we're kind of making fun of it because we're not always accepted in the mainstream. We're always on the fringes a little bit.
But she gives
great copy. I could, without fail, just put a tape recorder in front of Sandra. And you know you're going to get a great interview.
Yeah.
Transcribe.
True.
Bam. Done. So 1984, you started with The Village Voice, writing La Dolce Musto. 1984 to now, and then you've managed somehow to distill all that into a book. How did you chop it up? How did you slice it up?
How'd you pick?
How could you pick what you wanted?
It wasn't easy because I've written literally 1,000 columns.
Wow.
And I had to go through them step by step, reread them over again, which is horrifying sometimes because you're thinking, oh, I wrote that? That's awful. You know, what was I thinking? And then you'll hit upon something that refreshes your memory of a really exciting time in your life. And I tried to make a cross-section of columns so that there was gay politics, there were celebrity profiles, there were blind items, which are the most popular columns I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it all together. And my book company just asked me for a follow-up. So now I'm reading the 1,000 darn columns all over again.
Wow. What do you mean?
With a whole new book, which is very exciting.
What do you mean by a blind item?
those are the items where I pose the gossip item as a question and I don't put the names. For example, which female designer was found by her maid strapped to her bed by her gay boyfriend or something.
Ooh.
And everyone knows it's Mary McFadden. But usually the answers are always Courtney Love. But
is that the default? But, that's
by leaving out the name, these columns become like wildly popular guessing games. They become an interactive sport, really, for the reader. And they're all always offering me money and their firstborn and sex if I'll give them the answer, but I never do.
So give us a new one like that. Give us a blind item and that so our listeners can be titillated.
Oh, my.
You got a blind item for us?
I have so very many. I'm just...
Oh!
The first one that's on the tip of your tongue.
It's hard off the top of my head because I have so many, you know. That...
To have coffee talk with you.
Yeah, sorry, I can't. I'm blanking.
That's okay.
That's okay, pause.
My mind is on overload.
Ruminate on that, and we shall return to that question. Do not fear, do not fear. What is it, do you think, about celebrity gossip so much that we just clamor for, that we just love to eat up and chew up and taste and rub all over our faces? What is it about it?
What is it about celebrity gossip?
Yeah. Why is it so fad, fan-inspiring? I mean, people literally clamor for these things. If they didn't... You know,
there would be no
papers. Be no papers.
I know. It's nothing new. It's been a constant of human nature from day one. It's the great equalizer. Everyone from like the water cooler to the White House loves to get together and enjoy the common excitement of talking about someone whose life is apparently in a faster lane than our own. These people are not banal. Everything they do is big, even their mess ups, their breakups, their bad hairdos. And it's fun to talk about them. And what the Anna Nicole thing really shows is the dark side of human nature really, on some horrible level, enjoys seeing somebody who seems to have it all really not be happy and really be spiraling into tragedy, because it comforts us and makes us feel better about our own lives. Oh, look, we may be boring and banal, but at least we're not unhappy.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're not celebrities.
Now, what is your take on the whole Britney thing? Like, should we be concerned about this girl, or should we just truly be selling papers on her?
Amy and I have debated
this
subject before.
I feel like we should be concerned.
Yeah, I think it's moved past like the big orange street sign that's like "Do not pass here." You know, with like the reflectors on it. To me, it's you know, I don't know. We need to like, this is a national emergency or something.
Oh
for,
my God!
Not for,
no,
not for the government, but for like the paparazzi, because they want her to stay around so they can have this fodder, you know?
Exactly. She's definitely screaming out for help. There's no doubt about the fact that we should be concerned.
Yeah.
I mean, she's trying to erase herself. This is someone who never had a childhood or an adolescence, so she's having a delayed one.
Yeah.
And I actually think the specter of Anna Nicole is kind of looming over her and saying, you know, join me in hell.
Yeah.
And we have to pull her back from the clenches of that and make sure that she survives. Somebody should care about her as a human, not just as a cash cow.
We're going to put Amy on a plane and send her over her direction.
Oh, good, yes.
I'll go down to Promises. I need a little sunshine. Some sunshine. I'm drawn to the, you know, the type that she is anyhow, the Disturbed.
aren't we all?
Yes, aren't we all? So, but at the same time now, as an out columnist, what do you think about this whole Isaiah Washington thing and the fact that, you know, and I'm going to say it here, that the faggot word now has become the Ann Coulter, the Isaiah Washington. He just won the NAACP award for like best image. People stood up and clapped. You know, what is this? Well, you're bored by it, but I think it's pretty revolutionary what's happening, that right now we're having a huge conversation about the word faggot. We're having a huge conversation about, you know, with kids in school, if they say you're so gay, that there's lawsuits going on. You know, has this gotten out of control? Is this now finally just peaking, you know?
I think it's huge, and finally people are finding out that you can't get away with it. You could get away with it for so long. It's just the excessiveness with which Isaiah was targeted as the Antichrist that bothered me. Yep. It was almost as if, aha, you got caught, so we're going to hold you up as the only example of homophobia in show business.
Right.
And everyone descended on him, Glad, I mean, Glad does a lot of things to me that make me sick. You know, they'll grovel for any crumb from mainstream showbiz.
Yeah, well, even
if it'll make them money or get them publicity.
Right, even non-mainstream, they attacked Shirley Q. Liquor, and I just want to slap somebody in the GLAAD board for that, because leave them alone.
Yeah, then GLAAD was kind of like so overwhelmed with their power over this Washington thing that then they sent out this notice about Shirley Q. Liquor, and they even admitted this is not even a gay issue. It's a drag queen, but it's a racial issue. They also admitted they had never seen Shirley's act.
Oh!
Well, there you go.
I got their memo where they said we have to ban this person. I'm sure Shirley's thrilled. That's the best publicity she's gotten in years.
Well, yeah. she's on everybody's lips these days. Hey, Nee.
Yeah, well, I got three press releases from them this week, which you know, we'll talk about on the show. But it is. It's like there has become now this maelstrom of information, you know, with the Ann Coulter, with the Isaiah Washington, you know, and I'm just wondering where it's going to go. You know, are more, you know, homophobic actors going to come to the rise? Are we going to start seeing more finger pointing? And is everybody?
I don't think so. I think this whole episode showed that you can't get away with it anymore. You're going to be crucified. Though it was bizarre when he won that Image Award and people stood and cheered. It was almost like they were saying, you know, bravo, we love that you said that.
Well, yeah, I was kind of a bit strange to see the other black men in the audience either stand up. I didn't know if they were standing up because you've gone to rehab and you've stood your ground now and you've done the right thing, or
rehab,
or we're standing up to clap for you because right on, we don't like those gay guys.
We don't like
either.
The fags either. Woohoo! Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't even want to know.
It's
I don't even want to know either.
But they all applauded and clapped for Ann Coulter too. All the people who are now criticizing her and coming out, they all sat there chortling and thinking it was hilarious. So
yeah, it's she's terrible.
There's a lot of education that needs to go on out there.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's whatever it is. We'll soon see.
We'll get there. Well, to switch gears a little bit, and I think one of the constants in your book that's so interesting, because I did read it cover to cover because I was just enthralled and couldn't put it down. Damn you for making stuff so funny on the train. I'm snotting and guffawing and old ladies are clutching their purses and looking at me like, what the fuck is wrong with this boy? But you talked a lot about sort of the waxing and the waning of club life and that, which I think club life in New York, too, is a particular beast of its own. I think it has this incredible feeling that you really don't get too many other places, maybe Amsterdam, but that's the drugs. But in New York, what's going on in the clubs? What do you think? Because you still go out and do it and wrap yourself in it.
I know, and we've gone through a weird period in, I'd say, the last 10 years. Because first of all, in 1996, there was the Club Kid Murder that became the movie Disco. It was the book Disco Bloodbath and the movie Party Monster, where this Club Kid leader, Michael Ehrlich, and his roommate killed a drug dealer. That effectively not only killed the drug dealer, it killed nightlife, because nobody wanted to be seen in a club or dressed like a club kid or acting like a club kid. On top of that, Rudolph Giuliani, the mayor at the time, was on this hypocritical campaign to kind of clean up New York and, you know, smooth away all the edges and make New York safe for tourists. And he and even the current mayor, Bloomberg, have no respect for nightlife as a vital industry. Mm-hmm. They just think of it as like a nuisance that kind of tarnishes the neighborhood. So we're in this constant struggle, you know, with the city and the authorities to try to keep nightlife alive. I went to a club last week called Webster Hall for the Drag Queen Awards, and they searched my body from head to toe. They found a pill bottle, and they weren't going to let me in because it didn't say what it was on the pill bottle. The Duane Reade, I guess, wasn't enough for them to convince them that it was not something illegal.
Right, they're your Pyrin tablets, right?
But, I mean, I can understand why they did all that, because they're under such harsh scrutiny by the city. They're constantly being raided. If you serve a minor or let someone in with any drugs, they will close the club down for weeks at a time.
It's so funny, too, because Giuliani now is supposedly, you know, the gay Republican candidate, you know, the gay-supported.
It's so weird, because I remember him as the one who, first of all, was hypocritically espousing family values while he was cheating on his wife.
Right.
He was also the one who stood up for the St. Patrick's Day parade when they didn't want to allow a gay contingent to march, and he agreed with them.
Right. And his kids now hate him, you know, but now he needs him as a presidential nominee, you know.
I love that.
Like,
but now they're holding Rudy up as the drag queen nominee, because once on Saturday Night Live he did a sketch or something, or at some dinner.
Right.
And it's like, he's too liberal all of a sudden.
Yeah. They're saying he's going to have to do a lot of work because he's just too liberal, which just as cracks me up. This is the guy that came in like with a dirt devil and like hosed up all of, all of downtown, you know, Broadway, Times Square area, you know.
But it turned out he was living with two gay guys for a while. So, I mean, I think he does love the gays, actually.
Yeah.
But he's torn between a rock and a hard place because he has to espouse his party's, you know, party line.
Right.
Right. Somebody's got to tell him what to wear. You know, and that's our job, basically. So in addition to this wonderful book, which you've put out and folks can actually get now, it's in the stores, Michael Musto, La Dolce Musto, please run out and check it out. You Salt and Pepper yourself all over the television as well, which is just a gem and a charm to see you out there. Do you prefer writing? Do you prefer TV? Do you like them both?
I love going on TV. It's really intoxicating and people call me a whore, but a whore gets paid. I'm a free whore. Okay. I go on and give sound bites about, you know, if they tell you the show is about how Britney is a skank, I'll talk about that. Or if it's The Fabulous Life of Britney, I'll talk about how great she is. You just wind me up and point me towards the camera. And I'm actually the number one guest on Countdown with Keith Olbermann on MSNBC.
Awesome.
The number one non-NBC guest. In other words, free guest. And that's a fun gig because he and I have a really great rapport.
Well, and all the VH1 gigs, too, you know, I mean, where people are taking you back to the nostalgia. I mean, I have 22 years of work and meeting all these people and being in all these places. You have a much better bird's eye view than a lot of the people that they ask to be on who are just comedians or, you know, weren't in the middle of it all.
And those shows run forever. I mean, I'm on like the Behind the Music for Madonna. That's been on for like 20 years. It's like, you get a lot of mileage out of those shows.
I want to see a show with you and Charo. You just need to dish on the United States. I think that would be
Oh, I'd love to be on the Love Boat.
We love Charo. You know, Charo gave us the dish a few years ago.
Yeah,
the Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt, Jennifer Aniston thing. And we got the best dish because she said, you know, I can't do her accent, but she was like, you know, my friend's friend was their housekeeper.
It's just delightful.
And they were having that affair for forever.
Charo is the new Kevin Bacon in my world. It all leads back to
it
her.
It all does. It's all one degree of
She's
Charo.
Actually a serious musician. That's the
thing
about
That's why we had her on.
I have all her
she
CDs.
She played real flamenco guitar.
Oh, she's fantastic. And we had her on and we were talking about that, but I don't know how we got off on this, and she gave us like the best dish in the entire.
She said, "Do you have time to talk some more?" Okay, and then she went off in the other direction. It was delightful.
We got the origins of Coochie Coochie and it all.
Yeah,
it was
funny she hasn't learned English yet after all these years.
No, you think she could?
It's
you know,
working for.
Hey,
she yeah, exactly. Don't fix it.
Don't fix it. So give us some celebrity little tidbit. Just
doesn't
you know,
have to be
just,
the mysterious blind item.
Well, I just thought of some blind items.
Yay!
For you, first of all. Last year there was a big scandal. I remember a certain star got out of the police car. He tripped, and so did his toupee. His hairpiece in the back flew up, leaving only the hair plugs in the front.
Ooh.
And his people have tried to buy up the photos ever since.
Is this John Travolta? My girlfriend keeps going, he's wearing a wig. I don't know. My girlfriend thinks all
he's
these
wearing
men
a wig
are
and
wearing
a fat suit these days.
But he is wearing a wig and hairspray.
Right.
Well, he is wearing a wig.
And a lot of silicone. And a lot of silicone.
Oh, God, am I getting that?
That's a good one.
Let's see, what else do we have? remember a certain hunting accident? An insider swears that was actually the fault of the secret mistress of the guy who took the blame.
Ooh.
No one can give the answer.
Ooh, that's sneaking in the bushes.
It's Courtney Love.
So give us one that has a name. What's some good celebrity gossip this week going on?
You want names.
Yeah. Just so we can have a couple of blind items, a couple of seeing items.
You would think I would have gossip as a gossip columnist, but I never do. It's almost like going up to... It's like going up to a surgeon in a nightclub and saying, come on, perform.
Well, now, okay, let me ask you. I'll put you in a place, in a setting. Were you at the whole Oscars... shindig and all that? Were you in the LA scene for that?
I always watch it in my apartment with a few friends because it's very serious and important to me, and we have to just seriously just watch it, you know?
All right. So tell me the last big party that you went to.
Things are very slow right now, party-wise.
It could be a month ago. I don't care. I just want you to
look
paint
at
me
her
a...
digging. See, she's going to chip away and drill away
yeah,
into
you're
until
just digging.
She
I went to a party for Paul Verhoeven is my favorite director because he did the movie Showgirls, the immortal.
Yes.
Oh, we did. We do a live action version.
He has a new movie called Black Book, which is about Holland during Nazi occupation.
Yes, I just read about it.
He made it like Showgirls. He made it like a movie like Showgirls almost.
Ooh.
So that was kind of a fun premiere, a fun Nazi movie, you know?
Yes. Is there lesbianism in this movie as well?
No, there isn't.
There's
a hint of it, and there's lots of female anatomy showing. So it is a good lesbian movie.
Good.
Oh, it's a
Black
it's
book.
A movie just like Britney. Yay.
Yes, exactly.
And well, I mentioned the Drag Queen Awards. They're called the Glammies, and that's an annual event. It's getting bigger and bigger here in New York.
Yes. Who is the big winner? Who do you think is the top couple of drag performers in New York right now?
The top drag queen right now is named Peppermint Gummy Bear, and she's just an old-style, fun lip-sync artist who does big production numbers.
Mm-hmm. Peppermint Gummy Bear?
Gummy Bear.
Peppermint
yeah.
Gummy Bear. Delightful.
I'm sure she'll be touring the country, and you'll catch wind of her.
Yeah.
Well, just the smell of scented menthol in the air. Something flying by. There goes Peppermint.
Yeah.
I smelled her. Well, folks, we want to let you know, March 28th, right here in Chicago's very own Sidetrack.
Best bar in the world.
Best bar in the world.
At least
probably,
in the U.S.
Probably the biggest, too, right in Shy IL for the gay.
Absolutely.
Michael Musto is going to be signing his gorgeous book, La Dolce Musto, an awesome compilation of the columns. It's a great chance for you to catch up on a lot of his work through the years if you have not. And I highly recommend people check out his column each week in the Village Voice. You can catch that online, right? They publish you on the website.
Absolutely, villagevoice.com.
So you can keep track of that gorgeousness, Michael.
And we'll have them all linked as well on our site for the event at Sidetrack and also the Village Voice.
Well, Michael Musto, thank you so much for hanging out. And thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This show is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago, for the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows on our website and in iTunes.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it.
Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
The best and the brightest served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show, and Limelight.